I'm Alec Baldwin, and my new podcast from WNYC is about following great conversations to unexpected places. I'll talk to actors.
You know, if I get one more drunken guy,
hey man, greed is good.
Makers of public policy.
Politics is barbaric.
Critics and comedians.
I always work out the material in West Palm Beach.
No, get out of here.
I want to know what motivates them.
Turned down a lot of things. Your basic body heat, 2, 3, 4, 5.
How do they feel about what they do?
I don't mince words.
Do you wish you had? My show is called Here's the Thing. It's my chance to talk with people I want to know more about. This is Alec Baldwin, and here's the thing. A few months back, I attempted to catch up with Chris Rock. His dressing room in Broadway's Schoenfeld Theater was 5 floors up, no elevator. Chris's show, The Motherfucker with the Hat, was about a group of dysfunctional friends and lovers where every relationship had gone bad, really bad. Drugs, booze, cheating. No one was loyal to anyone. Chris played a recovering alcoholic who, at first glance, seems to be a good guy. But after a few minutes, it was clear he was the most self-serving of the bunch.
Come on, man, you're doing great, man. You're on the precipice of something beautiful. Come and stay with me and Vicky, man. Get on a nutritional beverage program, man.
Before this past spring, Chris might have been the last person you'd expect to see starring in a Broadway show. I mean, Chris can sell out Madison Square Garden. P.S., they have an elevator. Yet, there he was, between performances, in his attic dressing room at the Schoenfeld Theater.
I wanted my acting to grow.
You have, obviously, a huge following, black and white, in your concerts. And yet, when you go out in this audience, how black is the audience?
Well, I mean, put it this way. In the old days, they used to have signs up, whites only, whites only. Now they have a new thing. It's called prices. You know, some nights it's darker than other nights. I buy tickets every night. When this play is over,
You spend your weekly paycheck on tickets for people?
I spent almost a whole weekly paycheck on tickets.
As gifts for friends.
As gifts for
friends. Who otherwise couldn't come see the show.
Who otherwise could not afford to see the show. I tour, and I'm normally, you know, at the Garden or whatever. I have like 60,000 seats to give away when I'm normally on tour. And people have gotten used to this. My man takes care of us.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't take that away from friends and family.
You haven't done a lot of theater, correct?
This is the first play I've ever done.
This is the first play you've ever done.
I didn't do a play in high school. I didn't go to high school. So.
So not only your Broadway debut, but your first play period, you're with a pretty cool group of people.
I'm an amazing.
With a lot of experience.
You know what? And they have held me up. No one ever got frustrated at what I didn't know. You know?
Yeah.
'Cause this is a bunch of little things that people take for granted. I have no idea.
Such as?
You're never supposed to walk straight at somebody. You're supposed to loop. Just all these weird little things.
Yeah, my favorite is you don't give information to the person. So if you're standing here telling them something, you tell it out. You sit there and go open to the audience as much as possible.
All that open stuff, yes. Even today I'm working on it.
The Chris Rock that I know from your live shows, I don't see much of him in this show. Because that Chris Rock is like marauding the stage and has complete control over the audience. This is a different Chris I see in the play.
I'm really trying to act here.
Yeah.
You know?
Have you enjoyed it?
I'm enjoying it a lot.
What was the rehearsal like?
The rehearsal was the hardest thing I've ever gone through in my life.
I always tell people it's like having the Empire State Building shoved up your ass one brick at a time.
Yeah. And you
to learn the play.
Can't believe there's ever going to be a day when you know these lines.
What's been the surprise about doing this for you?
Honestly, I'm surprised I'm doing it. I mean, I'm surprised that I'm not bored with it already.
Mm-hmm. Are you afraid of that?
I'm really, that's the biggest fear, to actually be stuck doing anything.
Does this change for you night by night? Day by day?
You know what's weird? I'm figuring out how to make it change now. So I'm actually figuring out how to ad-lib every night without saying words. How to work each scene a little different and each line, and try to find laughs in places that I didn't find one the night before. So I'm, it's to answer your question, it changes every night.
Well, what I love about this play, by the way, everybody has loved someone. And not too far into the relationship, you say to yourself, not only is this probably wrong, this is definitely wrong, but you can't get out of it. How does this play resonate with you in your personal life?
I've been every person in this play.
Ah!
There's you not have. A person in
the
this
betrayer,
play.
The betrayer, the betrayed.
Yeah.
Everything.
Everything. And it's
the one who f***ed the other person in response to the betrayal.
Yeah, yeah.
The revenge
I'm every person in
every
the
person
play.
In the play.
It's the kind of play you can't watch without putting yourself in it.
When you write your material for stand-up, how do the people in your life react to how you fillet them on stage, if you will?
You know what? I'm like a lawyer, in a sense. I mean, it's almost like a legal document. It's all worded like it's
you're
all
covered.
Our wives and all our family. You know what I mean?
You're
it's
covered.
Like if I gave you the transcript, you'd be like, he hasn't talked about anybody.
Yeah, right. It would That's all, not you, baby.
It would all hold up in court.
Right. You're safe. But you do. But you never have anybody in your life.
No. Everybody's uncomfortable. I remember I read a quote Tarantino said, if people in your life aren't uncomfortable, you're not really writing. You're not really hitting it. You know, so somebody better be uncomfortable.
Did you grow up in a situation that was remotely like this? In an emotionally, turbulent environment?
No, my parents, put it this way, my mother cursed a lot, screamed a lot.
Yeah.
You know, my father.
My mother beat us with a curtain rod.
Yeah, we got beatings with curtain rods and brooms and brushes
hangers,
whatever.
Yeah.
But, my father, it's weird. My father, his temper towards my mother was always controlled. With us, he could lose it.
Yeah, why do you think that was? He wanted to protect that.
I don't know. I mean, first of all, I mean, guys from that era did not view women as their equals. They did.
Right.
And they were loving and blah, 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 blah. But they did not view women as their equals. Therefore, they could actually deal with the woman's emotional whatever swings way easier than a guy my age, because I view a woman as my equal.
Right.
So if I'm with a woman and she starts crying, I look at her like I'm with you and you start crying.
I say to women, my life, don't go female on me.
I'm like, I look at her like I would look at a guy that gets emotional.
Yeah, I thought if we're equal, then you can't play that card.
Right.
Don't play the female card.
So I'll just say my father and my grandfathers, both of them, were really delicate with their wives. You know, not a child, but close to a child.
How's it different for you?
My wife's my equal. And, you know, any butting of heads is because I'm dealing with you the same way I would deal with myself or I deal with any guy. And we're both wrong.
What are you going to do when this is over, do you know?
I'm not sure. I think I'm going to direct a movie. That's what I'm feeling.
So this is the time in your life when you do all the things you told yourself you'd never do. Play on Broadway, direct a movie.
Yeah.
Why do you want to direct a movie?
I don't know.
Is this your Warren Beatty phase? That's why you're watching Woody Allen?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, put it this way. If I can get a great director to direct me, I'll do it. But once
you
get
to... wrote?
Yeah. Once you get to the C-list, you might as well do it yourself. That's what I say. Mm. Yeah.
How picky are you about the films you do? Because you don't do a lot of films.
I don't know. I mean, I turn down a lot, but I don't have a list of great films I've turned down.
Do you turn down, regardless of whether they're great or not, do you turn them down because for you, you always have the stand-up thing in your pocket and the concert thing in your pocket? You're not in any hurry to go out and make a living.
Most movies suck, man. Really suck. See, I'm messed up because I like to see something I haven't seen or haven't seen with a black person. Black people in film is still at its infant stage. And
why do you think that?
I don't know. You know what? Here's the thing. You know, you hand a studio person a script. And sometimes the studio people are good. 99% of the time when you hand somebody a script, they pick a person in the movie that they identify with. So if you hand a woman a script, if the woman's got 9 lines in the movie, the first person she gives you notes about is the woman. And if you hand the boss the script, he's going to give you notes about the main character. And if you hand his assistant the script, he's going to give you notes about some other. Everybody figures out who they are in the movie. Now, when you hand somebody a black script, they don't relate to anybody in this.
That's a very good point.
I'm serious. Even when it's...
And when you have an executive who does relate to a black person in the script, what does that mean to you? You struck gold?
It's never really happened. They just...
Never.
They're making a product all of a sudden. That's what I've experienced. And when you do... Because, I mean, there's no black studios or whatever. So you end up... You always end up with just... a person trying to make a piece of product. They might as well be
potato chips.
They might as well be making an iPad.
They're in the potato chip business as well.
Yeah, they're kind of in the potato chip business.
Yeah. But you seem to me, because you're so smart and so clever, that you have as much of a white audience as you do a black audience. Don't you think so?
Yeah.
In spite of the fact, your stand-up can be pretty tough on white people.
Yeah, but I always say my stand-up's like Chinese food. And what's Chinese food? Well, Chinese food is one of the most popular foods in all of America. And they don't put American on their menus.
Right.
People really want Chinese food.
Yeah.
They don't put French fries and
grilled cheese
on the menu of
right.
The most popular
you're the
restaurant.
Chinese food of people, black comedy.
I'm just saying, when people see...
When people come to Chris's restaurant, they want Chris's menu.
They want Chris's menu. It's the guy that tries to cross over that gets less white people, I find.
Do you think the appeal to you with a black audience is how much you have fun with white commentary? Do you think your black audience expects you to do that when they come see you?
They expect me to do it, yeah. What am I trying to say here? First of all, all the materials run through black. It's run through black people.
By a commission.
Actually, first it's run through Jews. I always work out the material in West Palm Beach.
Right. No, get out of here.
I go to West Palm Beach, and guess what? They show up. I play a little club, so I figure I'm in front of these people. They're a little older. If I can get them to laugh at this, when I get in front of the black people, they're gonna go zerk. And then I get in front of the black people. I make some adjustments here and there. And this is all before I put, like, The Garden or something on sale. So it's these two very different groups I work it out in front of.
More from my conversation with Chris Rock is coming up in a minute. I'm Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing. I'm talking with Chris Rock backstage at the Schoenfeld Theater on 45th Street. This is Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing.
How old are you now?
I'm 46.
You're 46?
46, man. Which means...
I'm 53.
Dude, we're
old. And you started?
I started probably 5-7 years before I got on SNL. But I always say I haven't been poor a day since I met Lorne Michaels.
Right.
I've never been broke. Since a lot of his stuff sticks with me. One thing he said to me is, like, everybody loses their first money.
Yeah.
Now, if you're talented, you'll make some more.
I can't believe he said that. He's so right. He knows more about... Let's take a moment to talk about the wisdom of Lorne Michaels.
Oh, he knows.
Like, he's always there to remind you how you can lose perspective about this business, or at least in my case,
No. He's very good.
How much have things changed in your mind? And not just for you, but for you specifically, but in the business.
I don't know about you. I find the business a lot smaller.
In what way?
Less movies, less... I mean...
Less stuff that relates to me.
Put this way, you know what? Less stuff that relates to me.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
For the young people.
You know, this whole reality thing, I'm not going to dismiss it. You know, sound like some old person talking about rap music. It's not going to last. You know what I mean?
But do you think
at the same time, I don't get it.
Do you think you'd make it today?
Yeah.
If you came in today?
Yeah. Me and Sandler, that's our little test with each other. We assess the stand-ups. We go,
You still got it.
I still got it. You got to keep the weight off a little bit, you know. That's what I'm trying to do. Dude, Bon Jovi.
Still doing it.
Still doing it.
Still doing it.
Still doing it, man. Just look hot. Just try to look hot to somebody.
You don't have to lie. You still got it. You still look. How many kids you have now?
I got two.
How old are they?
Nine. Getting ready to be nine and getting ready to be seven.
So little. What are you worried about raising your kids in this world?
I care that they're good with money. I don't even care if they're assholes. When I say good with money, I just mean you got $2 and you spend one and you put a dollar in the bank. I don't mean that they run Microsoft or they flip money and buy a house. I just mean...
Does that come from your childhood?
Yes, it comes from my childhood.
Same with me.
I just mean, can they handle their own money? That's it. Because
it's a tough hole to get out of.
It's a tough hole to get out of, and it's a weird hole for a pretty woman to get out of. And they end up in relationships with guys they wouldn't have relationship with.
There's a great line that Anthony Quinn has in Lawrence of Arabia where he says, I am a river to my people.
I'm getting a lot of that now.
You're like that.
Well, here's the thing. You can only help. Like, I got some family right now, guy, whatever, losing his house, whatever. I'm going to help him move into wherever he's going to move into. I'm not buying his house.
Yeah.
Because he's never going to be able to afford the house.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm a river, but...
It's a little river.
It's a little river. Because when you turn down somebody and they know you have the money...
Yeah.
There's one thing to go, these kids are kicking my... or whatever, and you don't have the money. They know you have the money.
Yeah.
It's almost like a woman go, it's like, I know you have vagina and you have sex. You just don't want to have it with me.
Right. I remember I used to do a movie and they'd say to me in whatever way, what would come back was, we don't have the money for that. And what they really were saying was, we don't have the money for that for you.
For you.
For you, we don't.
We got it for Leo.
We have the money. Exactly.
If Leo wants it.
For Leo, we're going to sell our houses to get Leo to come.
Yes.
But for you, we don't have the money.
We do not.
And that's what you're saying to people in your life, is I don't have the money for you.
I don't have the money for you. You're not going to be the reason I'm doing some bad kung fu movie, okay?
I got one last question for you. When you're home and you really want to relax, what do you like to watch? Like, what's entertainment to you?
You know, it's probably Woody.
Why?
Just about any Woody.
What do you love about him?
It gets me like...
Yeah, me too. I'm going to go do his new movie.
Lucky bastard.
I am a lucky bastard.
God bless you.
I'm so lucky.
You know, one of the reasons I'm doing this play is like, maybe Woody will come.
Maybe Woody will come.
Maybe.
Any Woody?
Just about, man. I mean, put it this way. The average great filmmaker, has about 4 good movies. Right?
Yeah.
Woody has about 12.
Yeah, Woody has a dozen great movies.
You know what I mean? Like,
doesn't he?
Like great, and then he probably has about 10 more really good ones.
Exactly. Bingo.
I even like the new ones. Hey, man, Match Point, it's a fine motion picture. Vicky Cristina, I'm happy.
So that's the dream, is to be in a Woody film.
That is really, really, honestly.
And this is how unfair this world is.
I love the guy.
And here I am. I don't have 1/10 the talent you have in comedy.
Oh, shut up.
And I'm off to Rome
to
make a movie with Woody. I'm off to Rome.
Rome.
I want to rub this in. Watch me even further. I'm off to Rome to make a movie with Woody. And you'll be here sweating your balls off in this steam room. It's like the scene in the play today where you say to him, you were looking at a picture of her while I was tapping on the real thing. You're going to be watching Woody and I'm going to be tapping on the real thing.
Oh, man.
I'll be thinking about it. But we're both going to be happy.
It's not too late.
Of course it's not too late. What are you, crazy?
Maybe one day.
The entire time we were in Chris's dressing room, a Woody Allen movie played on a TV off to the side, muted.
Ah, you're going to work with Woody, you lucky bastard. Dude, I just want to hang on a set. I just want to, like, what happens?
Come to Rome and I'll be like, Chris, what are you doing here, man? Woody, you know Chris.
When are you guys in the fall?
You never know.
We'll make it.
Chris did eventually make it to Rome, and he did have dinner with Woody Allen.
Best of all time.
He never called me, though. Huh. This is Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing. This podcast comes from WNYC. Tell me what you think. Let me know at Here's the Thing.